Good morning and welcome to Backchat. I'm Hugh Chiverton. Your co-host today is Danny Gittings. Danny, good morning to you.
Good morning.
So protest sites at Mong Kok have been removed this morning. Buses are travelling on Nathan Road and Argyle Street. For the moment, that means back to business in Kowloon after more than 2 weeks of disruption. How significant has that been and what form has it taken? What about shops, restaurants and offices in the affected areas? What about the massive traffic queues many have experienced, especially on Hong Kong Island? How would you rate the effects on international events planned for Hong Kong, on tourism, on the stock market, property and retail prices? How long will those effects last and how do you measure it? What's been your experience? Do you feel just mildly inconvenienced or do you think your livelihood's been threatened? Are you perhaps broadly sympathetic to the students but you feel that enough is enough? And what are the prospects for things actually getting better if there are talks? Give us a call with your thoughts. Our number 233-88266. You can text 6393-5925 or email backchat at rthk.hk. That's backchat at rthk.hk and we'll read out your messages. Or you can go to our Facebook page, Backchat on RTHK Radio 3, and comment there. Joining us for our first discussion, well, for the whole discussion, actually, in our central studio is Ted Hoy, Central and Western District Councillor from the Democratic Party. He's Vice Chairman of the Traffic and Transport Committee of the Central and Western District Council. Also there is David Webb, shareholder activist, founder of website.com, and joining us on the line, Andy Kwan, Director of the AC Centre for Business and Economic Research. And we're going to be joined by a Liberal Party representative after the news at 9 o'clock. Andy Kwan, maybe we'll start with you.
Yes.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us. We've seen all kinds of attempts by economists and others to estimate the economic effect of the umbrella movement, of the disruption to business caused by the umbrella movement at the moment. Most recent one I've seen quoted was from the Bank of America, who were talking about $100 million a day. Basically, I think that was on the basis of lost tourist revenue. That was assuming that a 10 to 15% drop on tourism-related revenue, as I say, of about $100 million a day. We've also seen estimates of a couple of billion or even hundreds of billions of dollars. How would you work out how much money has been lost in Hong Kong because of the umbrella movement and Occupy Central?
I think the first question we should ask is to look at what is the impact on the GDP. Luckily, this week I'll send it. Like I wrote a paper with our colleague Dr. Zhou, and we just published the paper in Hong Kong Economic Times today. We use a large scale econometric model to estimate the impact. So basically, the way we do is we have a baseline model. We assume the number of tourist arrivals, okay, is 12%, which is the baseline because we use the first 8 months the data, okay, which is about 12% a month, and then we lower the number from 12% to 10% and 8%.
I'm sorry, 12% of what?
10% and 8%.
But why are you on 12%? What's the 12% in the
12% is basically is on the first 8 months, the number of tourist arrivals basically per month, okay, in terms of annual change is 12% a month.
It was up 12% for the first 8 months?
Yeah. It's on average, yes, okay. A month. And then we lower the number to 10%. The reason why we lower the number, we just want to assess the impact of the movement, the students movement. So for the 10%, what it means is in the next 4 months, basically is from September to December, the growth rate, okay, of the number of tourist arrivals is lowest to by 6%, from 12% to 6%. Okay, so this is for the final 4 months, which eventually drag down the number, okay, the entire year. So, and then we also assume there's even a more pessimistic picture for the entire year. The growth rate is drops to 8%. Now, these are the two scenarios that we use. Now, let me just talk about the most pessimistic scenario. Now, if the growth, okay, rate of the tourist arrivals basically drops to 8%, the real GDP will drop from originally 2.39% to 1.93%, which is about won $11.2 billion. Okay.
That's very similar actually to some of the other forecasters. Looking at Bank of America, they say almost exactly the same
thing. I think so. Yes. Because when you multiply per day, okay, and then you look at the another component, basically exports of services, which represent the tourism part. The growth drops from 3.07% to 2.08%, which is the mostly affected area. In terms of money value, it's about $10.6 billion. And other major component we look at is look at.
Do you mean expenditure or do you mean GDP here?
This is in terms of GDP, the dollar value, the actual drop in the dollar value, because when you assume 12%, okay, the growth rate, and we use a baseline model.
I'm just trying to understand what you're banding around numbers like 12 billion, 11 billion.
Are you saying
that's the amount of sales, for example?
Yes, that's in terms of GDP, yes.
Sales and or GDP, because obviously a lot of what tourists buy here is imported, so that reduces GDP. You need to look at the net figure rather than the gross.
I will go back to this. And in terms of imports and goods and services, because you have fewer exports of services, and there's also a drop in imports of goods and services. The imports of goods and services drops from 2.15% to 2.07%. So the net impact basically is negative, but somehow because the imports also become smaller, that's why the net export basically is not basically that's a drop in 2.0 that's a drop from 3.07% to 2.08%. Okay, so another thing is you look at the private consumption expenditure now, which accounts for about 60% of our GDP, but using the baseline forecast, the original growth is 2.34%. Now it drops to 2.19%, which is equivalent to about $2.3 billion. So, all in all, the impact on our GDP on our economy is quite limited.
Okay,
because when you look at the entire number, $11.2 billion, but you look at the year 2013, our GDP is close to $2.1 trillion, which is a significant small number.
Okay, so you're saying that the overall impact is going to be quite limited, but obviously there are going to be particular sectors that are heavily affected.
Yes.
Which sectors of the...
Tourism, definitely, because when you look at the number, when you look at the exports of services, now it drops from, originally 3.07% to 2.08%, you're talking about the loss of $10.6 billion. So when you talk about tourism, we talk about the retail sector, we talk about the hotel, we talk about transportation, we talk about food and beverages. So if you look at this number, yes, the most affected area is the tourism.
And you mentioned domestic consumption. And domestic consumption, you're thinking about restaurants and so on, things like that?
That's more to deal with the psychological impact, because I think we look at the consumer confidence. Say the latest survey conducted by the Chinese University of Hong Kong, and they just put out a figure. The index of consumer confidence dropped about 4.4%, which is quite small. Because when you look at the previous events like financial tsunami, and you look at the SARS epidemic or even the Asian currency crisis, when this episode hit Hong Kong, the drop is quite significant. It's more than 15-20%. So far, the consumer confidence is less.
That's interesting. So people really aren't... That suggests people are not experiencing this as an economic problem.
It's a minor economic
political problem.
It still affects the overall economy, but it's not like a systematic shock. When you talk about epidemic, people don't go to eat, right? People stay home. When you talk about financial tsunami, you talk about the banking sector, the financial sector, which is the heart of the economy. So in this case, it's quite localized, and the effect is quite limited, but of course, we don't want to see any loss in GDP, but somehow we can understand the issue here is quite localized, and it does not have very huge economic impact.
Okay, but David Webb, common sense would say that the hours and hours that people are spending in traffic queues, there's got to be a cost to that. There's got to be...
Well, There is less road traffic than there was. The MTR.
Sorry, there's less road traffic than there was.
You yes, because on, because Queen, people Queen are taking Street, the MTR. Let me finish, Mr. Chiverton. there's less road traffic because people are taking the MTR. The MTR, through the government, has said that their passenger figures are up 20% roughly, which, by the way, equates to about an extra $8 million a day of fare revenues for the MTR. So we've managed to get, as a consequence of this, people off of the roads and onto the trains. There is currently only a tiny fraction of our road surface is occupied in Hong Kong. It's a very localized area.
It happens to be the key areas. I mean, it's not back streets. It's the most.
No, but
the
there are actually
areas,
quite a lot of ways around it.
The busiest areas have been blocked.
There are quite a lot of ways around it. All the schools have gone back.
Tell this to people who have spent hours and hours in traffic jams and the school children.
Well, they often do
anyway. Turning up late and who
tell us the children on McDonald Road who have.
That's
to
why they're building
the
Central to Wanzhai bypass, because they often have traffic jams on in Central. So what's new about that? I think the impact has been massively overstated. When the Census and Statistics Department comes up with its third quarter GDP figures, and probably fourth quarter for the year, or whether they do it monthly, we will see bare movement of the needle. Some of it has been self-inflicted. The government shut down the schools with no real good reason and reactivated them all before any change in the road blockages had occurred, and the kids went back to school all right. Buses started running again. Another piece of self-inflicted economic damage is the mainland stopping tour groups coming from Hong Kong. They made a decision, not the people in the tour groups, but the mainland government said, we're not going to send organized tour groups to Hong Kong. I don't know whether they've reactivated that yet, but that's their choice.
You refer to self-inflicted, but nonetheless, the fact is that then has an impact, doesn't it, on Hong Kong and people in that
sector?
I think the
impact on GDP of not having democracy is far, far greater than a few weeks of disruption on some roads in Hong Kong. And you have to put that in perspective. The lack of competition, the cartels that dominate large sectors of our economy are holding back economic development. And they have been for the last 17 years. And there's, in fact, cartels existed before the handover as well. But the point is that if we had a democratically elected government that wasn't elected by tycoons and their cartels and therefore wasn't respondent to them, then I think we would start to see a liberalisation of the economy and quite a boost in the long term to economic productivity here.
You made that point very strongly, which tells us that David Webber spoke to the protesters in Admiralty and made that point very strongly. He said, don't worry about the small economic impact of these protests, think about the large economic benefits. There's only one problem with your analysis, David Webb. You're assuming that these protests will actually succeed in switching the Hong Kong system to a more democratic one. If they fail, which seems far more likely, then you've gone through all this economic dislocation for nothing.
You've pushed the debate forward somewhat.
Well, but
are you saying you shouldn't try because you might fail?
But
no,
you're saying the economic benefits are the economic cost is outweighed by the benefits. But you're assuming those benefits will come, aren't you?
Well, I would say they're probably outweighed by a hundredfold or more. I mean, we're talking about, you don't have a human right to drive down Harcourt Road, okay? You do have a human right to true and universal suffrage, and put these things in perspective. And so, even if they only have a 5% probability of getting the chief executive to send a new report to Beijing recommending a nomination threshold of 1/8 or 20% or whatever the right number is, but a sensible nomination threshold, if they only have a 5% chance of achieving that, they've still got a big economic win from the result.
Ted Hoy is Central Western District Council. Mm-hmm. Good morning to you. I tell you what, a lot of people have said to me. I support the students, and I think they're right in many ways. But look, I have been spending an hour. I've been spending an hour and a half. I've been spending 2 hours on a journey that usually takes half an hour, and this has been going on day after day after day after day. My life is getting seriously disrupted. I'm just spending half of it stuck in traffic, and I'm losing sympathy. Mm-hmm. Do people say that to you?
Yes, I have to admit that. When I speak, I have two roles. One role as a Central and Western District Councillor representing Admiralty and Central, and another role representing myself as a Democrat politician. You know, as a District Councillor, I do receive complaints, many complaints, from residents complaining that they are trapped in the MTR for hours and there's no buses going through the central district, so there's no buses on the mid levels and the western and western districts. And this
we're talking about 200 bus routes being disrupted, aren't we? We're talking about.
I think the number is less now, but anyway, they are affected adversely. But I believe that it's always easy for the government to call them off, to tell them to go home and get off the roads. It's very easy to shout that out so that people can go back to their normal life. But this is not backed up by any reasoning, because when the government is not yielding at all, when people have been pursuing real democracy for more than 20 years, and they have got nothing now. So I think with reasons, I have sympathy for the students in the umbrella movement, and I would apologize for the students to the residents to accommodate.
You say as a district councillor, you receive complaints from people in your constituency. Mm-hmm. Do some of them tell you they're not going to vote for you next time, and they're not going to vote for anyone in the Democratic camp because of you're supporting this protest, which causes such disruption to their daily life?
I think that there are two camps of people. People saying that I'm not going to vote for you because of the umbrella movement which you support, and there are people who was originally in the middle, and now they said, I'll vote for you next time because you support them and you support real democracy. So there's always been two camps of opinions. And so, you know, there are two roles that I have to play.
I'm just curious, as a Central and Western District Councillor, and the District Council elections are coming up, I think, next year.
Do you expect
you're going to have a more difficult time standing for re-election next year?
I can't do any estimation now, but as a politician, I believe that I have to follow my heart. You understand that?
Yes.
So if I support the umbrella movement, I support real democracy, I have to go for that to the end.
Mm-hmm. Andy Kwan, are you speaking as purely as an economist, or have you got a political?
Well, my position. I support the pro-occupant movement in the sense that whatever we have suffered so far is only limited in terms of economic cost. I would call it like a short-term pain, but long-term gain. Because we don't know whether the movement will be successful or not, but somehow certain things have been revealed clearly to the world. The democratic reform in Hong Kong is moving very slowly. In fact, it's going backwards. That's a very loud and clear message to the world, and we have to do something about that. And the government is not able to govern Hong Kong. And when you look at what has happened in the past 20 days, and I think the government is very adamant and unable to deal with the situation. And the Sun movement has really hurt not Hong Kong, hurt the government credibility as well as the police reputation. Because what happened yesterday, about 2 days ago, about that event, okay, the 7 policemen beat up one guy, and that is quite clear. It's like if we recall in about 20 some years ago, if you look at the U.S. case, the Rodney King case is like this, and it really aroused certain sense of like anger in the society, and which put a lot of pressure on the police force. And later on in L.A., the police force has to do a lot of reforms to fix it.
What about the long-term effect? Do you think that people are less likely to organize international events and so on?
Because
we've already seen that, haven't we?
Not really. You have to understand who organized the whole campaign. Students, and if you look at the so-called survey, people who support the campaign are people who are with higher level education, and also with even middle class.
Setting aside the rights and wrongs of the case, just looking at the perceptions from overseas, will somebody who is thinking of organising a conference, maybe here or maybe in Singapore, Singapore on the ballot, we'll go for Singapore.
No, it's very short term.
Short term means that there will be an impact for how long? 6 months? A year?
Once the campaign is over, 1 or 2 months, everything will be back to normal. Because people love to come to Hong Kong to have concerts. We have the first class facility. And if you look at the convention center, it's almost number one in Hong Kong. It's almost number one in Asia, and which attracts the international exhibitions. We have another one in near the airport. So I'm not worried about the reputation, because it's, if Westerners look at the case, and they understand the situation. It's only like the mainland people or the mainland government and have a hard time to deal with the situation, because they have to think about the entire safety of the country, because you said the precedents will happen to other provinces. I understand the situation. But, and yet, Hong Kong is unique. Hong Kong has its own culture. And I think the mainland government has to understand this. Of course, I know it would not take one day to finish the democracy, we have a democracy, but the message has to send out. This is what I believe in.
David Webb, what if it's more like Bangkok and this just rumbles on and on and on, and you're just going to get, you know, ongoing clashes?
Well, this is entirely up to the authorities in Beijing and Hong Kong. I've said in my site, in an analysis of the situation, that we're basically the only place in the world that tries to combine the civic freedoms that we do have with the authoritarian government that is unelected. Other places have authoritarian government and none of these civic freedoms, and they muddle along. China has done that for 65 years, and most places in the world combine civic freedoms and democracy. But the current situation is unsustainable. We have a paralyzed government with no electoral mandate, an increasingly aware LegCo of the ability to filibuster and so on. These various techniques have been developed over the last few years. So nothing gets done unless it's extremely populist and not necessarily economically rational. I think the government needs to choose in Beijing. Do they want to make Hong Kong more like Singapore, where you have very limited freedoms of speech and assembly and quite heavy jail terms for organizing protests? Start controlling the media and requiring deposits from newspapers and having heavy propaganda control over that. Do you want to make it more like the mainland, or do you want to make it more like a civilized and open society? So, you know, I don't think that staying where we are is a sustainable situation.
And you're basically saying, and let's hold the Hong Kong economy hostage until they make that choice.
It's not holding the economy hostage. That's a gross overstatement.
Putting the economic impact on the economy until they make the choice.
Well, as even on certain fairly downbeat assumptions, Mr. Kwan has estimated a 0.1% impact on GDP for the year. These are pretty modest impacts. For a much greater cause. And so I think that the protests should continue. Maybe there'll be some sort of land swap arranged where they get to set up a big protest site in Tamar Park or something and free up Harcourt Road at some point. Maybe that kind of negotiation can be had. But I think only if there's going to be meaningful progress, like a report to Beijing on the actual situation in Hong Kong and not the situation that they wished it would be. That would be put the ball back into Beijing's court and say we do need to reset the nomination threshold back to 1/8. Gradual and orderly progress means we shouldn't have quadrupled the difficulty of getting nominated. And please advise. I think at that point the protests could stand down and wait for NPC's decision.
Ted Hoy, what if there aren't blockades in future and there aren't barricades, big barricades across the road, but you just get the wildcat actions that we saw, precipitating the problems the other night? Mm-hmm. You just get 20 people who just walk out in the middle of the road and stop it, and that could just be happening all the time, couldn't it?
It can be happening all the times, but when you speak of the economy and GDP, I think Hong Kong people must admit that it's hard to calculate the future situations. I mean, even without the umbrella movement, without protests at this time, without real democracy, there will be endless protests and occupying movements in the future, and there will be.
So you said there will be endless occupying movements in the future.
I believe so. In the future, and even not occupy movements, but there will be disobediences and more tense situation between the legislative and the executive. In the electrical, and more bills cannot be passed, competition bill, the reform on land registration, and in that sense, that's loss of money,
that sounds
loss
like
of
a
GDP.
Threat. That sounds like you're holding Hong Kong to ransom.
No, I think no one can control that situation to come up. And that's only my estimation.
Mm-hmm. You were talking about the long term. So far, we've been talking, and they'd say, oh, it'll be over in a few months. The short term impact is quite limited. But if you talk about the long term situation, you say this disruption is going to continue in various different ways for a long time to come.
I believe so. And I think the anger now has come to the peak. And in the long term, there must be more disobediences, if not the occupy movements.
Peaceful, authorized protest with a permit, marching from A to B on a Sunday, that's all been tried for 17 years now, and particularly since 2003, and with very little result in, as far as democratic reforms go. We should have had universal suffrage in 2007. We didn't get it. 2012 was discussed. Didn't get it. 2017, we're being offered a bogus version of it. And so... You know, I think the authorised protest route has pretty much run its course. That's not working.
Okay, just a comment from Alan before we break for the news, who says, impacts of Occupy. Reduction of traffic, clean air in Hong Kong, a much more unpleasant place for human beings. Don't care about the tycoons and bureaucrats getting their limos to Central. The government could learn from this, and instead of spending another $100 billion on reclamations to build more roads into Central, just discourage automobiles. I walked to Wan Chai from Central, pleasant in the clean air. Came back by MTR. Tourism, 98% of Hong Kong people are happy to have fewer mainland tourists. Of course, the tycoons don't like any of this, and after Beijing, they're the ones who run this city. So we'll just go back to a more poisonous and hostile environment, says Alan. Want to hear your views as well? Email backchat at rthk.hk with your thoughts. We break for 3 minutes for the news now. The weather, fine and dry. Mainly fine tomorrow, cloudier after that. 24 degrees now, relative humidity is at 68%.
You're listening to the news on RTHK.
Welcome back. This is Backchat on a Friday morning. Interesting discussion as ever. Danny Gittings is your co-host. My name's Hugh Chewerton. We're talking, focusing today especially on the impact of Occupy Central and the umbrella movement, the economic impact, the effect on people's lives, their working lives, and so on, how we can measure that and the time spent in traffic and those kinds of things. We have with us in our Central studio David Webb, shareholder activist, founder of website.com, and Ted Hoy, Central and Western District Councillor from the Democratic Party. He's also Vice Chairman of the Traffic and Transport Committee from the Central and Western District Council. Andy Kwan, the economist, was with us before nine. We're also joined now by Jeremy Young, who's chairperson of the Liberal Party Southern District Office and executive director of Russell Reynolds Associates. Our email address is backchat at rthk.hk. Lots of interesting emails and arguments there. You can email us backchat at rthk.hk. That's probably the best. And we'll read out your message. Okay, Peter says... this is what Peter says. A small police beating, brackets no offence, and the pandems are already going crazy. This clip is being exploited like it was 9/11. In my opinion, this amounts to disproportional propaganda by the protest organisers, disrespect the rule of law, and only further polarises the public. Well, that's press freedom and freedom of speech at full display. In the meantime, in the US, the cops killed some 110 people in August this year alone. Let's put things in perspective. OC organisers and pandems are openly supporting and instigating illegal mass demonstrations across town. This has started to erode the rule of law in Hong Kong already. It's obvious that the organisers and pandems try to exploit every misstep by the police for maximum media exposure and political gains. However, many instances have been blown completely out of proportions. Nothing is said about the weeks of provocation, humiliating lunchbox searches for weapons, insults and attacks by the protesters against police. This gives the impression that pandems and OC organisers are highly prejudiced and don't mind destroying the police's morale and reputation for their own cause. Everyone who unfairly criticises the Hong Kong police should also consider the flip side of the coin. Until today, through its restraint and very professional approach, the Hong Kong police has actually saved Hong Kong and its citizens from intervention by the PLA. Not every action of the Hong Kong police was justified over the past few days, and it should be investigated in an impartial, non-prejudiced manner. Stepping back and looking at the bigger picture, I believe the Hong Kong people owe a great deal of gratitude to the Hong Kong police. That email comes from Peter. Duncan says, on the question of the MTR, David Webb obviously doesn't use the MTR. It was already stretched.
I do.
He says it was already stretched before the blockages and is now dangerously overcrowded. Try Sheung Wan Station at peak hours. Mike says, democracy? What does Hong Kong want? Every country in the world is controlled by cartels. Republican Party, Democratic Party in the US is a giant cartel. They decide the candidates for us to vote for, and it's based on how much money that individual can raise. Follow the money and look what we get, a bunch of boobs, says Mike. And Gladys says, when the streets are reclaimed for the selfish drivers, terrifying taxis, manic buses, the triad truckers, and as we are slowly poisoned by the pollution, we will look back with nostalgic fondness at this period when the only pollutants were tear gas and pepper spray. As for those complaining about road delays, just wait till that trophy project bridge is open, and you ain't seen nothing yet. Meanwhile, I look forward to rigorous enforcement against those who illegally occupy yellow box junctions. Cumulatively, how much is this illegal activity cost? Says Gladys. Thank you very much indeed for that. Backchat@rthk.hk is our email address. One more from David. Just come in, and David says, who cares about the Chinese tourists? The only good thing about the good thing in the new territories is that we, the local people, can get on local buses and not have to wait for 45 minutes. Has anyone done a survey on how many local people have lost their jobs through being late for work from full buses? We can also buy milk and nappies at the moment without wasting hours going round the shops. This is not the students' fault. The government could have stopped this in day two, but they're deliberately delaying, playing politics to provoke and make the people violent. The big question is, while we are consumed talking about the students, what is the government doing behind our backs, says David.
Okay, let's bring in Jeremy Young, who's the executive director at Russell Reynolds and Associates, and he's also the chairperson of the Liberal Party Southern District Office. So, good morning, Mr. Young.
Good morning, everyone.
Now, Southern District, you've been one of the worst affected, haven't you? We've heard reports about these massive traffic tailbacks all the way from Aberdeen through to through the Aberdeen Tunnel. Tell us something about the impact of Occupy Central in terms of your district.
Indeed. Although I have to say the impact has been fluctuating depending on the day of the week. But for every working day that I have to go to Central to work, my transportation route is from Pokfulam to Central, and I've witnessed basically an increase in traffic, travel time, the queue length, people waiting for buses, and people standing on the street with kids, thinking what to do with their children who are supposed to go to kindergarten. It is frustrating. It takes, in general, for me, either twice or three times the duration for each way of commute. And frankly speaking, I find it extremely difficult to quantify that cost. But it is difficult. My colleague from Stanley, who travels to Central every day, for example, on average day, he now takes 2.5 hours to come to work. He's just given up to come to office, full stop.
Now, before you join the show, our other guests were pretty much all saying the economic impact on Hong Kong is going to be very limited, really very small. Do you agree with that assessment?
I disagree with anyone who tried to quantify whether a cost is big or small in terms of economic impact. For some people,
so you'll disagree with the Census and Statistics Department when they do it?
Whatever it is, I'm not here to represent any statistics or economists. I'm here to give you some examples of actual livelihoods of an office executive trying to service international and local companies hiring executives. I find it extremely difficult to quantify, especially when the movement seems to be ongoing. Anyone jumping out with the conclusion to predict the actual cost, I would take it with a pinch of salt.
But isn't it the point that Hong Kong adapts? I mean, this is the great thing about Hong Kong, and we've all adapted. I mean, my office is in Admiralty, in the heart of the protest zone, and I live in mid-level, so you just find a different way of getting to work.
Yes, that is correct. That is one strength of the people of Hong Kong. I do believe that we adapt very well. That has been one of the reasons why we have been pretty successful so far, I think. But I don't think this is the way to do it, to force people to adapt. While participating in what I, in my view, totally illegal activity.
So you would tell the protesters to leave immediately, basically?
I would really encourage them to leave immediately, yes, indeed. I would say leave the current places that are illegally occupied. Go protest and occupy anywhere else that I think will limit the impact of the people's livelihoods. It's been going on for sufficiently long enough for people or businesses to run into permanent cash flow crisis. I've heard some people say that this is a short-term cost for long-term gain. You may agree or disagree, but some people will not survive this long short-term cost. And I don't see other people having the right to decide who should pay that short-term cost. People going out of businesses and not seeing families. I think people may say I'm exaggerating, but I just want to share. My third baby was born 20 days ago, exactly on the same night that the movement started. I haven't really seen my daughter for over an hour or two over these 20 days. Now, quantify that cost.
David Webb?
Well, you could take paternity leave. I believe that's an ongoing trend, and stay at home and use video conferencing to deal with people.
That's
on
a rather flippant response, David. I mean, paternity leave even though it exists
is
only a couple of days.
Taking leave, that will be my cost.
And, it depends on your Russell Reynolds policy. I don't know what that is.
And using video conferences, that is also the cost that should have been used for business contacts. Is that what you're suggesting? To shift business resources?
No, I mean, obviously you have still been going to work. You said that. I don't know whether you drive or do you take a bus or what.
For your information, I have adapted to ride a motorcycle to work to minimize the time that will be required to work.
And it's still taking you an hour and a half on a motorbike?
Not myself. I said my colleague from Stanley.
Ah.
I normally take
still taking him
15
2 hours.
20 minutes, 15 to 20 minutes per ride to go to work. Now it takes half an hour to 45 minutes per ride.
Ted Hoyer, you were saying earlier, I mean, you're in Central and Western,
yes.
And you understand the dislocation there, but for people in Southern districts, it's even worse, isn't it? I mean, they can't, like we do in mid-levels, just walk down the hill, or, I mean, you can't walk from Stanley to Central, can you?
I think we don't have to argue whether people's daily life is affected. They are affected. We don't have to argue. But the point that we need to discuss is whether the daily life is affected, the situation, whether it's worthwhile for people, for the students to
can't
do that.
Can't you have both? Because people were suggesting, okay, we've got an email from Chi Ho I have in mind, who says, some protesters, thank you very much, Chi Ho, by the way, backchat at rthk.hk is our email address. Chi Ho says, some protesters have gone too far in claiming that it's the tyranny that clears the scene in Mong Kok. In fact, the occupation resulted in inconvenience for those who take the bus to Yamate in Mong Kok. This is not the sort of democracy that people call for. Such protest in the form of occupation of streets imposes the will of the protesters on others. Call for democracy may fall prey to the tyranny of the protesters against those who do not take part. By the way, the government has made a smart move when public support for the campaign is wearing thin.
Well, they've dragged it out, haven't they?
The whole society now has a deep-seated survivor, Chi Ho. Couldn't you... What if the...
I mean, this could have been over a week ago if the government had agreed to talks and had talks rather than walking in and out of, you know, first they said
whatever
talks and then they took a week to try and arrange it.
Whatever's happened, what about the protesters now moving? I mean, there are tents already appearing in Tamar Park. What if that became the centre of the protest?
If the government would sit down and negotiate.
Can I put this to Ted Hoy? Because you may be hinting at this, so that the protests continue, they exercise their democratic right, their point is still made, but it's not one that puts people out of business and stops people seeing their newborn children.
I think for the students, it's their bargaining power that they are in the street and on the road, so that if they move to Timur side, at the Timur Park, I think the protests wouldn't be as effective as it is now. So just let me continue what I was saying, that we must consider whether it is worthwhile for the whole society to sacrifice. For me, it's a short term and small pieces of their daily lives for a long term, you know, stability and for a long term rule of law and real democracy. This is the point that we need to consider.
But just remember, look, the government said on the 2nd of October at 11:30 at night, when they were facing calls for CY's resignation after tear gassing the protesters, they said, we will arrange talks with the students. They dragged their feet for a week. Then they spit the dummy and said, we're not going to talk to the students. They have not made it possible to have any kind of rapprochement. But if they actually sat down with the students and agreed a way forward on this, the students could start to make some concessions, such as moving everything to Tamar Park and continuing the protest there. The government hasn't even made that negotiation possible. They've just dragged their feet and then played games with trying to gradually eat away support and blame the students for the continuing delays, which are largely the government's fault.
Well, of course, they have now said they're going to talk, aren't they?
Again, they've said they're going to talk, but they haven't said when and where. I think the strategy is quite clearly, as Michael de Gaulle has famously called it, the anaconda strategy of dragging things out, eroding support and trying to blame it all on the students without giving any concessions whatsoever. And I think they need to be a little bit more grown up about this and say, if the people want to reduce the economic and daily life impact of transport delays, which were pretty bad already in rush hours anyway, and that's why we're building bypasses and so on. But if they want to mitigate that, then they should sit down and talk with them and stop pretending that they want to talk. Actually talk, you know.
Jeremy Young, going back to the economic impact, are you aware of any employers who've put staff on unpaid leave or even laid off staff so far? And do you think that's a possibility if this continues?
For our offices, we have not done that, but we have been issuing notices to staff. Should they be affected adversely and significantly by this movement, they can elect to work from home. Now, this is made possible because thanks to technology, but this is not going to be a sustainable solution. It is absurd that we're paying rent at the office while not using it and utilizing it. It is absurd for people coming into Hong Kong for business meetings needing to cancel those flights, cancel those meetings, and our projects will not be completed. It is a definite negative impact on our businesses. I don't know how to quantify that, but in addition to that, I really want to say I believe the success of Hong Kong has been built on principles that we treasure a lot, which is one is respect for rule and law, and I just find it difficult that we're debating whether it is worth it or not when a group of activists using illegal behaviors are now asking the general public to pay that bill. Now, no matter how big or small that bill is, it is not right. Now, I am all for resolution by negotiation and talk. Yes, the government, if they started talking early with the students, fantastic. The bottom line is we don't want to see people occupying the streets that affects tens of thousands, if not millions of lives. And there's no end in sight. That is the frustration.
Just on some data that early data that we have had so far, a jewellery company called Luk Fook, one of the big ones here, has announced that in Golden Week, their sales in Hong Kong and Macau, which is mostly Hong Kong, were up 3% year on year. And I believe the tourist arrival figures in Golden Week were up 7% year on year. So the impact on from that, given how large the tourism population has grown over the last decade or so, is pretty
negligible. On the other hand, I mean, if you're a car park owner in Central Admiralty, your revenue is down 100%, isn't it? And we've seen
the Admiralty car park. Is that the MTR company, which has also had $8 million a day of extra revenue from fares, so they're probably better off.
There are several car parks within the occupied zone, and obviously they're receiving no revenue at all. You wonder how much longer they'll continue paying their staff if they're receiving no revenue.
Yeah. Yeah, quite possibly they'll move the staff to other places. I mean, I think some of the where you've had one or two shops closed in chain stores like jewellery stores, what they've observed is that the demand has shifted to their other outlets, and they've probably moved some of the staff across as well.
And how about
the other shop because we need more people there?
I'm sure there'll be people gaining, there'll be people losing, but at the same time, the principle of this movement is that it's illegal. It's like Hong Kong people are so keen on criticizing people buying fake products. It's like we are asking people to rate whether the price tag of a fake item is worth it. It's just absurd. If we respect the rule of law and democracy for people respecting each other, students, yes, boiling over frustration, occupied the streets for a duration of time, people may have tolerance for that. But this is no longer a spur of the moment thing. This seems like to be a highly calculated, pre-planned, supported movement that seems to have no end in sight. Now, whatever it is, please make our lives back to normal. We are all for, I'm for universal suffrage. I want it so much, but the way to do it is something that I'm strongly against.
Ted Hoy, among the comments, complaints you're receiving from your constituents, do some of the people who contact you, do they fear losing their jobs or being put on unpaid leave because of these protests?
Not to that extent. They are just angry about waiting for buses for half an hour, 45 minutes. But in response to you, Mr. Young, for people who keep asking people to protest to get out of the road, but can those people also ask the government to talk to the students and to give real democracy?
Absolutely.
have you talked to the government? Have you urged the government to do that and to give people real democracy and respect the people's will?
Frankly speaking, I have not made my voice heard. I have not told the protesters to leave either. I'm so busy traveling to work, trying to do a mounting amount of delayed projects. I don't have time to talk to protesters nor government.
Well, you're a district councillor, isn't it?
He's a district officer.
Oh, sorry. District office of Liberal Party. I mean, the Liberal Party has probably the most to lose from true universal suffrage because it's only fairly recently that they've contested direct elections. They've been mostly cosseted by functional constituencies in the Legislative Council and large blocks of seats on the election committee. So surely your party, Mr. Young, if we actually had true universal suffrage and abolished corporate voting and so on, would have much less influence in the political process.
I have no particular view on your comment. I have no legislative power. I'm not a district councillor.
No, your party I'm talking about.
You're a politician,
yes,
right?
My party. The party I belong to, yes.
Yes, I mean, that party has traditionally occupied the functional constituency seats in the small circle constituencies.
And how does that impact my view on whether Occupy Central movement is legal, illegal, and whether my life is frustrated?
Well, I think we can all agree that it's illegal to occupy a road. It's blindingly obvious. That it's illegal to occupy a road. It's also illegal to park on various parts of the roads in Central, which a lot of business people have been doing over the years.
People who are behaving illegally should be expecting consequences to their actions, just like if I park illegally.
Yes, they are aware of that, I believe.
David Webber, this has come up with others as well. Are you comparing the impact of illegal parking in Central, which I hate as well, but are you comparing the impact of illegal parking with Central, the reduction in traffic flow with the impact of Occupy Central?
It's on a different scale.
The point is
that the individual level of offence we're talking about is quite similar. It's just that you have more people doing it right now in Harcourt Road. You have to look at, again, the scale of the issues here. We're talking on the one hand about something in the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, the right to free and fair elections and universal suffrage, versus the right of motorists, if you put it that way, to drive down Harcourt Road when they've got other roads available, and in any case, it's not a human right. As several of your listeners have pointed out, the air quality is a lot better. And just to Peter, who was writing in about the police and the good service that many of them have been doing, not all of them, he called it propaganda. Now, this news clip keeps being shown of police beating up a protester. Is he saying then that the TV stations are being manipulated in some way by the protesters? I think that's pretty unlikely. And as to the 110 people in America who were shot by police in August, that's entirely true, but most of them were shooting at the police at the same time because of the problems with gun control in America. So, you know, lethal force tends to get met with lethal force in America. That's just a fact of American life.
Okay. More comments from listeners. Emails backchat@rthk.hk is our email address. Jeffrey says, on the subject police to join the protesters, I'm not quite sure what the reference is, to be honest, Jeffrey. If the police join the protesters, the government will have no choice but to speed up a resolution, says Jeffrey. Bowen says, the crux of the issue is that China's success in governance for the last two millennia depends on her ability to keep the people stupid. That only works if she's the only country in the world that matters. Now that it's no longer the case, what's the point of being able to govern a country in apple pie order if the people become an inferior people by comparison? Chinese leaders certainly won't want their people to remain as second-rate people in perpetuity. We need to ask, what's the cost of managing people's cast of mind and intelligence in such a way that they won't clamour for democracy? Seriously, the only way Chinese will not remain second or third rate, even if they don't enjoy fundamental civic freedoms, is if the Western democracy's political values and institutions collapse. And I don't think anyone on your panel would want that to happen, and neither do I, says Bohm. Paddy says, I used to respect David Webb. Perhaps he should stick to what he does best. Does he actually think China will give Hong Kong full democracy? The students can protest.
Yes, I do. It's just a question of time. They will have to eventually.
Paddy says the students can protest until they're middle-aged. China will not give Hong Kong democracy. Make do with what you have and be thankful for that. It's time people grew up, woke up. You are urinating into the wind, says Paddy.
Well, I mean, eventually China is going to be a democracy itself, or it's not going to get to the levels of prosperity that its people desire, because there's no large-scale economy that doesn't have that's prosperous that doesn't have democracy as well. And so that's an unsustainable situation. Of course, if China was democratic, they wouldn't deny democracy to Hong Kong. So these things, there is an issue here of at what rate does China progress and how does it progress?
So on a more personal level, David Webber, picking up on that last email, Paddy Khan have been the first person who said that kind of thing to you. You're someone who's taken a... You're someone who works within in the business community.
Sure, but
has
taken
a very strong stance on these protests. Can you tell us a bit what sort of... I'm sure you've had many people supporting you, but what kind of negative, hostile feedback have you had?
It's a ratio of about 90-10 or 95-5 in favour. Some very complimentary emails about what I've said. And I think most people understand that if you want free markets and the benefits of competition, then you also want that in your leadership. And they almost go hand in hand. So I think in the long run, people recognize that's the way to prosperity and happiness for the general population.
And how about the other side, the other 5%?
Well, the usual, you're a foreign interferer in domestic Chinese affairs, you're hurting the feelings of the Chinese people, all that sort of stuff. You have to stand by your values and principles and you get used to that kind of criticism. I've personally lost some money in the value of the retail stocks that I own, but I believe in the long term they're going to be better off as businesses in a democratic Hong Kong. So, I'm willing to take those fluctuations in my portfolio and possibly buy more of those stocks because in the long run, I think Hong Kong will be a better and more harmonious and successful place if we have proper democracy.
Do you put your money in tourism?
Just thinking about the portfolio. I don't have any airlines for other reasons.
I mean, so. Hong Kong tourism, hotels or anything?
Can't remember right now if I have any of those.
Jeremy Young, isn't there an argument that I understand, you're very busy at work and with a young family and everything like that, but there's a time when you have to lift your head up and look at the bigger picture and look around you and look at Hong Kong, look at the world, and also look at the a young generation in Hong Kong, the generation who will be the future leaders, the educated people, young people in Hong Kong. They look around the world and they see that... Around the world, people get to choose their leaders, and they just want that. And it's a very simple request, and it's a very straightforward request, and it's a very natural request.
They look around the world and see the youth unemployment rate in Spain, in Italy, where it's full democracy there.
Yeah.
You can't have the best of both worlds. Young people should have their passion. They should be driven and hungry for success. They should be very impatient. Yes, we've all been through that.
But but people do see the pitfalls. They travel like yourself, and they're educated around the world, and they have experience, and they know what's going on, and they see the pros and cons, and they still want democracy.
They see the pros and cons for
themselves. So, Mr. Young, you're opposed to democracy now. I thought you just said you wanted universal suffrage. Now you're opposed to it because it will create unemployment. Is that right?
No, I did not say that. I said, did they also see the youth unemployment rate in Europe? Because the host said they see the political system in the West or other places, but they should obviously see the whole picture. I'm not saying it's opposed. I'm not opposed at all. I am all for democracy and universal suffrage, but at the same time, there will be price to be paid, of course.
Well, I don't think you can say that democracy causes unemployment, per se. You can say
that
some socialist policies, like a fixed working week, and, I mean, there are some very rigid social policies in Spain and France that have caused some of this.
What I'm saying, the students... Do what you want to do, go for it, but please respect the others who are, funny enough, working hard to pay the taxes to fund their education. Do it. Go do whatever you want to do. Fight for the cause that you want, but do it in a proper and legal way that respects others. That is the fundamental principle that I must hold close to my heart as I bring up my children, that I need them to respect each other.
Okay, final email from David, who says, given the fact that there are around 3.5 million voters in Hong Kong, most people support their children, therefore Hong Kong has a very big support of the public. The students are not to blame, the government is incompetent and not putting all the cards on the table, says David. Thank you very much indeed for that. And thank you to all those who've commented this morning through emails and as guests. Thank you very much indeed to Jeremy Young, who's chair chairperson of the Liberal Party Southern District Office, to Ted Hoy, Central and Western District Councillor with the Democratic Party, and to David Webb, shareholder, activist and founder of website.com. Thank you very much indeed. Danny, thank you very much indeed. Danny will be your host for the next few days as well, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Danny will be in the chair as I take a few days off. Here's the weather just before I leave. Fine and dry. Maximum temperature about 27 degrees. It's going to be mainly fine tomorrow, and it's going to be cloudier in the following few days. The readings now 24 Celsius. The relative humidity is at 62%.